working with reactivity. If at the outset, when I check my mind, I find within some fault of insufficiency, I'll stay unmoving like a log, in self-possession and determination. When the urge arises in the mind to feelings of desire or wrathful hate, do not act, be silent, do not speak, and like a log of wood, be sure to stay. When the mind is wild with mockery and filled with pride and haughty arrogance, and when you want to show the hidden faults of others, to bring up old dissensions or act deceitfully, and when you want to fish for praise or criticise and spoil another's name, or use harsh language, sparring for a fight, it's then, like a log, you should remain. And when you yearn for wealth, attention and fame, a circle of admirers serving you, and when you look for honours, recognition, it's then that, like a log, you should remain. And when you want to do another down and cultivate advantage for yourself, and when the wish to gossip comes to you, it's then that, like a log, you should remain. Impatient, indolence, faint-heartedness, and likewise haughty speech and insolence, attachment to your side, when these arise, it's then that, like a log, you should remain. With perfect and unyielding faith, with steadfastness, respect and courtesy, with modesty and conscientiousness, work calmly for the happiness of others.
So just a note on this term reactivity, many of you will know what that refers to. So the reactive mind tends to be the mind which habitually acts on the basis of greed, hatred and delusion. So it's your knee-jerk, ego-threatened kind of jump-in-there type reactions, which is often contrasted with response, which is more creative and comes from the opposite of greed, hatred and delusion, love and wisdom and generosity, clarity. So that those words are quite often used in our kind of discussions about these kinds of topics. Reactive on the one hand, creative on the other, or react and respond. Those are some sort of ways in which we use those terms, which can be quite helpful. And reactivity practice is sometimes said to be one of the most useful day-to-day ethical practices we can do. And this section, so the first verse, saying that we should develop a non-reactive state of mind by acting as if, sort of almost like we have no senses at all, you know, like with sort of like this log sitting there. And when the mind experiences attraction or aversion, we should neither act nor speak, but remaining like a block of wood. When the mind is inflated or critical or full of arrogance or intoxicated, evasive, dishonest, when it looks down or blames others, we should remain like a block of wood. Reactive mind is also greedy, possessions, respect, fame, status, or just wants attention. And it likes to hold forth and it doesn't really care about others, seeking its own advantage, longing for an opportunity to preach its own opinions. So as Chris was reading, I was thinking, oh, what are the moments where I have to kind of go into block of wood mode most frequently? And it's, why is it that sitting in these kinds of seats always means I tell embarrassing stories about myself? It's like, Don't get ordained. You have to sit here and tell embarrassing stories. No, but I was thinking of when I'm getting the blame for something, or it looks like I might be getting the blame for something, and it's somebody else. You know, some kind of like push somewhere else, or I'm not getting the credit for something. I'm just like, or that kind of that edge of gossip, which kind of turns from a conversation which is about some genuine piece of kind of concern about someone. But if you sort of don't like them, you know, it sort of like turns into a bit of a, oh, and then she did this, and you know, that those kinds of things can tip quite quickly. So some of these are quite gross, but there are more subtle versions which we can get into. And then there's that really lovely verse at the end, with perfect and unyielding faith, with steadfastness, respect and courtesy, with modesty and conscientiousness, work calmly for the happiness of others. I thought, I just kind of crossed my mind that any group of people working for the love of other beings, that could almost be like their anthem or something. Somebody needs to set it to music. It's it's just a really lovely description of what, at its best, a group of people trying to do have some benefit in the world are trying to how they're trying to work. With perfect and unyielding faith, with steadfastness, respect and courtesy, with modesty and conscientiousness. Modesty in the sense, we've been having a bit of a running discussion in the team recently. Modesty not in the sense of false modesty. Modesty in the sense of sort of lack of arrogance or sort of inflated sort of look at me ishness. With modesty and conscientiousness, work calmly for the happiness of others. So ethics, the Pali word is sila, and it literally means discipline. And I suppose when I think about it, it evokes a sense of maturity, emotional maturity. So in that sense, discipline. So when the three-year-olds are screaming, you don't scream too. You know, that kind of restraint. And refraining is not the same as repressing. So Bhante Sangharakshita has done a seminar on this text called, it's in the library, it's around, it's called The Endlessly Fascinating Cry. And in relation to this topic, he uses the analogy of a horse. So you're not just like stopping the horse and refusing to let it go anywhere. He's talking about directing the horse as he gallops along. And I really like that, because it gets away from that idea of being like a log, as in just, you know, locking everything down. But it's like a log in terms of, it's going along, the energy's going along, but you're guiding where it's going. It's not allowed to sort of slip off into acting out the glaciers in one direction or another. Another analogy he gives is like an artist controlled the medium of her art. You know, it's not just splash everything everywhere. You know, I mean, some art is, but it has a kind of discipline to it, even in the process of being creating. And it's probably reminding you too of the first two of the right ethics: eradication of arisen negative mental states and preventing the arising of negative mental states. So we're trying to use our effort. It is again an act of deliberate guiding of mental states. One person involved in Buddha fields, sometimes he'd define Buddhist practice as learning to be less of a nuisance. And I quite like that. I call to mind that to mind sometimes. In a way, this is kind of learning to be less of a nuisance in different ways. And there are various examples that Shantideva gives in this section. So I've tried to categorise them under at least two of the kleshas, under craving, the heading of craving and the heading of hate. So in terms of craving, there is craving for wealth or attention or fame or status or admirers, honours, recognition, fishing for praise, that kind of arrogance, that kind of wish for sort of pridefulness seems to be related to desire. Or attachment to your own side. Did you notice that line in the reading Chris did? That could be to do with your side of an argument or your side of your people, however you define your identity, versus those people. So in the sense of the craving for belonging in that particular camp. And then there's the hate categories. So there's he's referring to sort of general rudeness or publicly being critical, especially for your own advantage, or mockery, or rehashing old arguments, or using harsh language to pick a fight. So those kinds of hate-driven, aversion-driven behaviours. And then there were a few that weren't so easily categorisable, out of which I picked faint-heartedness. An interesting one. How can you be like a log of wood in the face of faint-heartedness? It's almost like it's a very sort of like low energy state, isn't it? Or gossip. Gossip sometimes is a desire for drama, which can be hate-based, I suppose. And impatience, which might be a desire for immediate reward or removal of the dislike, so that could fall into the desire or dislike category as well. And laziness and deceit. So all of those are the kinds of circumstances where Shantideva is saying, be like a log. So again, this is a bit of a countercultural recommendation, isn't it? Because it doesn't quite chime with the conventional narrative either. This kind of state of restraint, refraining, is another skill, I suppose, in terms of discipline. And it's got a very different energy to it to the one to do with warrior attitude. So I'm going to invite you again for 15 minutes or so. To see if you can think of any block of wood type examples in your own experience where it was just better not to act out whatever it was going on in your mind. And you had to actually just keep still in your next step. So it does have a different kind of tone to it, to the warrior energy, but it's perhaps a little related. Now I'm thinking about it more. It's perhaps a little related. So my questions are: what examples can you think of when you needed to be like a block of wood? And then this is perhaps the place to bring in what conditioning might affect your reaction to this. So do you like this particular strategy that Shantideva's suggesting, or don't you like it? And if you do like it or don't like it, can you find out something about your own conditioning that might be steering you towards one way or another? And you may find people in your group or in your pair might have a very different kind of response to it. So see what the others make of it, because that could help point to your particular conditioning, which leads to your particular response to it. So what examples of the block of wood can you think of, and does your own conditioning affect your reaction to this strategy?